So Manu did a sacrifice to get a son, and he got a daughter, and now he's asking, kya hai, right? Why? He did a sacrifice to get a son, but a daughter came, and he's asking, what's wrong? How, you know, you promised a son, and now there's a daughter, so what happened? Well, he's asking in this verse what happened. Translation, you are all self-controlled, well-balanced in mind, and aware of the absolute truth. And because of austerities and penances, you are completely cleansed of all material contamination. Your words, like those of the demigods, are never baffled. Then how is it possible that your determination has failed? So let's repeat. You are self-controlled. Excuse me. You are all self-controlled. Who's he speaking to? All the priests? You must be speaking to all the priests, right? Speaking to Vasishtha? Yeah, then he spoke to his guru, Vasishtha. And his he spoke to Vasishtha, but it must be Vasishtha and the priest. Purport. We have learned from many Vedic literatures that a benediction or curse given by the demigods never proves false. By performing austerities and penances, by controlling the senses and mind, and by achieving full knowledge of the absolute truth, one is fully cleansed of material contamination. Then one's words and blessings, like those of the demigods, are never a failure. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. So, have you ever said something that didn't come true? Anybody? Yes? Only one. Wow. If you've never said something that hasn't come true, then you're self-controlled, balanced in mind, aware of the absolute truth, completely cleansed of all material contamination, and therefore your words will never be baffled. So, I want to look at this verse from two perspectives. One perspective of the words of other devotees, and particularly Prabhupada's words, and the perspective of our own words. Because there's two ways you can look at this verse. One way you can look at the pure devotee, when he says something will happen, it will happen. And the other way you can look at it is we say things, particularly we make vows. So the vows we make are our words, and they should not be baffled. So I'll tell a few stories, which I don't think you've heard. When I was a young devotee in America, at the temple I was staying in, we were very active and very successful in book distribution and preaching, and we would regularly report our activities to Prabhupada, and we received a letter from him, and he said, if you continue in this way, meaning all of us, not just in that temple, in 25 years, this letter was in 1972, so 25 years would be 1997, Christianity will be finished. Any of you read that letter? I believe it must be to Bhakta Das. He was the temple president. Then we had a political party. Prabhupada said, Tattavit can correct me, Ramachar would be president? Or was it Balavanta or both? Of the United States. Balavanta. I thought it was Ramachar. Anyway. One of our devotees would become president of the United States. Hasn't yet happened. So the first words haven't happened. The second one hasn't happened. Then in 1975 in Mayapur, I had the great fortune of being there. And when the devotees came back from a morning walk, We said, what did Prabhupada say? And they said, Prabhupada said there's going to be a third world war. And that hasn't happened yet either. Of course, many things that Prabhupada said have happened. But then we may question, well, why didn't these things happen? And I have a nice story that will explain. It'll take me in the direction I want to go. In probably it was 1991 or 1992, I was in Mauritius for a few years. And when you hear about Mauritius or you go there, you're reminded that Prabhupada said Mauritius would be the first Krishna-conscious country in the world. So I spent a total of 3.5 years there. And at a certain point, I began to doubt that Prabhupada said that. I had heard a morning walk conversation, and Pustha Krishna Raj asked Prabhupada, how far is Mahaprabhu's prediction that his name will be heard in every town and village true? And Prabhupada said, that depends on the preachers. So we've heard it will go to every town and village. I was even in a lecture in Los Angeles. Prabhupada said, it will go to every town and village, with you or without you. You can stay and get the credit, but if you leave, you won't get the credit. So it seemed like it's a given, it will happen. And in answer to this question, he says, well, that will depend on the preachers. So I had a doubt that Prabhupada said that Mauritius would be the first Krishna-conscious country. We also heard something about Fiji. Have any Fijians here? We also heard something like that. But anyway, I had a doubt. So I did my investigation and I began asking people, who were there when Prabhupada was there? Did you ever hear Prabhupada say, this would become the first Krishna-conscious country? And I couldn't find anybody who said it. So one day we were spending some time with the man who had spent more time with Prabhupada and Mauritius than anybody. He basically hosted Prabhupada. He was, I think he was a member of parliament at that time. So if anybody would have heard it, it would have been him. So I asked him, did you ever hear Prabhupada say Mauritius would be the first Krishna-conscious country? And he immediately said no. And then he thought about it for a minute and he said, but he did say it could be the first Krishna-conscious country. So obviously there's a difference between would and could. And I have another story. Tie this all together. When devotees were preaching in the early days in India, they were finding it difficult to preach in Bengal. Bengal was communist at that time. So Tamal Krishna Maharaj told Prabhupada, the Bengalis aren't very interested in Krishna consciousness. And Prabhupada said, they are not interested, or you cannot get them to be interested. He just threw it back. In other words, he was asking a rhetorical question, that you're not able to make them interested. Then another time, Prabhupada had explained that during the time of Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, the Gaudiya Math was extremely powerful. And it was so powerful that the most popular movement in Bengal, the Ramakrishna Mission, almost had to shut down. Because the preaching of the Vaishnavas was so strong that just by their preaching, that whole Ramakrishna Mission was being exposed as not genuine, as a deviant. They didn't have to really preach that they were deviant. They just preached Siddhanta, and that was revealed. Anyway, they may have preached against it, I'm not sure. But the point is, at that time, that mission had lost its foothold. It was at one point, probably the most popular movement, religious movement in Bengal, maybe all of India, I don't know. But after Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur left the planet, it again became very powerful. And Prabhupada said it was the fault. He said, it was our fault, the fault of our God brothers, that movement became so powerful because of the preaching. diminished. And in the wake of diminished preaching, that movement became powerful. It's a Mayavad movement. And so Prabhupada said, it is the fault of our God brothers. Interesting, isn't it? So now we go back to the statements that Prabhupada made that didn't happen. We haven't seen it. Well, I can tell you about World War III. Later on, there was a conversation, and Prabhupada said, you can tell your countrymen that because of the Sankirtan movement, we have averted World War III. Tattvavid, you remember something like that? Something along those lines, I heard. Because we're all waiting. Yes. Yeah. Distributed a million books and so on. We probably distributed more, right? 5 million. Yeah, probably distributed more. Yeah. Prabhupada was asked, there's such an interest in the world today in vegetarianism. Is that due to us? He said, yeah. Even we're not directly preaching vegetarianism, but we're preaching the holy name. The effect is there. So Prabhupada said there will be a world war, and then it was averted. And then Prabhupada said Christianity would be finished by 1997, but he did say if we continue preaching this way, which we didn't. And then Prabhupada, as I pointed out, said, Mauritius could be Krishna conscious, but we have to do it. And Balavanta has to still run for president if he wants to fulfill Prabhupada's prediction. So sometimes when Prabhupada would make statements, he's making statements in terms of, even if it doesn't seem it's a statement of possibility, he's making statements of possibility. This will happen, but there's conditions to make it happen. Yes? And we are the ones who make it happen. So don't think, oh, Mahaprabhu said the movement will spread to every town and village, so all I have to do is take prasadam and do kirtan and everything will go. No. Haribol. No, it's not like that. Then there's that other conversation you may have heard. Vishnu John Swami asked Prabhupada why. Bhaktivinoda Thakur said, I left this world, my work undone. And Prabhupada said, so he gave it to us so we could finish. That's his mercy. So we also have to see it that way, that you have mercy. The spiritual master or the previous acharyas, they could do everything, but they leave something for us to do. So now I want to look at it. Of course, we have the story of Nrisimhadev, and after Lord Nrisimhadev had to come and kill Hiranyakashipu, he requested Lord Brahma. Who knows what he requested of Lord Brahma? Anybody know? In regards to this topic, he made a request. Yeah. Don't give out those boons. Because the idea is when you give out these boons, because Krishna will back up the devotee. So he says, okay, I'll give you these boons. So now Krishna's bound to back him up. And so he had to come, and it was quite a job to fulfill that boon. So he said, don't give boons like that anymore. And Vishnudatta Chakravarti Thakur says that when a devotee wants to give mercy, he's like, how does Krishna know where to give mercy? And he said, because the devotee points in that direction. He says, please, that direction, give mercy there, to this one. So Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur said, Krishna's mercy follows the devotee. Where the devotee's looking, then Krishna will give it. So in that way, Krishna fulfills the words of his devotees. When the devotee makes these statements, then he's obliged. But in the case of spreading Krishna consciousness, because we all have free will, then here we see how Prabhupada is wording his statements in a way that these things could happen if we make them happen. We're there, So in that sense, then you could say Prabhupada empowered us that by 1997, Christianity would be on its knees and Krishna consciousness would have taken over, had exposed it for what it is. But it didn't happen. So we didn't do it. So you could say the blessing was there, but we had to do it, and we didn't do it. And of course, the blessing is still there. We can, you know, we have another 25 years ahead of us, and after that, another 25. So we can say that Prabhupada has blessed us. You know, he's blessed Mauritius, it could become Krishna conscious. He's blessed us that we could, also with science, with the world of science, that it could be exposed and so forth. So now I wanted to talk about our words. So that's Prabhupada's words, or the words of sadhus, pati, and Arjuna. Krishna says, declare it, konteya pratijanihi. Declare it boldly. My devotee will never be vanquished. So devotee says it on behalf of Krishna. It's going to happen. But what about our words? So we make vows. And it said, don't make a vow you can't keep. But we are encouraged to take initiation. So we make vows, very heavy vows. And one thing I noticed when it came to initiation vows, that Prabhupada was very, very concerned. And although Prabhupada was very liberal in many ways, when it came to keeping one's initiation vows, it was very strict. So when we make a promise, we give our word, so that should be it, right? This verse is also saying that, you know, because they're saying, you gave your word, it was going to be a male, and it was a female. So you gave your word, and you broke your word. So how is it that you're a pure devotee, and you broke your word? I don't understand. It's a contradiction. But not even pure devotee, then Prabhupada would sometimes say, if you don't keep your word, you're not even human. We're talking here, you know, pure devotees. How could you not keep your word? You're fixed in bhakti. You're fixed in spiritual life. You didn't keep it. And Prabhupada's saying human being means keep your word. So, one time Prabhupada was asked, how do you love the spiritual master? What do you do? How do you show it? What does it mean to love the spiritual master? And Prabhupada said, it means to keep the vows you made at initiation. That's simple. He's very, very strict about this. And when devotees made vows which they didn't keep, then Prabhupada said, you promised. So it was just a simple word. You promised. That should be enough. Interesting, isn't it? You said it, that's it. It's done. That's your word of honor. You are your word. What you say is what you are. That's what Prabhupada was explaining. And that's when he said, a human being will keep their promise, only an animal will not keep their promise. Very heavy. And then, Prabhupada said something quite serious in this regard. Some devotees were not following the principles, not accidentally not following, but voluntarily, consciously not following. So, but they were doing their japa and kirtan, and they had their sangha. So it was going on, but there's no intoxication, no illicit sex wasn't being followed. And that was presented to Prabhupada. And their argument was that, well, at least we're doing kirtan, we're doing something. And that's when Prabhupada made that statement, something like, yes, in 300 lives they'll become. Maybe the chanting will take effect in 300 lives. And the reason for that, Prabhupada explained, he said, because they're committing offense, which is to disobey the order of the spiritual master. So then they're committing nam aparad. So then if you commit nam aparad, until you overcome the aparad, then lifetime after lifetime, right? You won't get the benefit. So that's pretty heavy, right? So I make a vow, I'm not following the principles, now I'm disobeying the order. Of course, they were voluntarily disobeying, not regretfully disobeying. That's also different. Apichet Siddharacharo, that verse, when the acharyas comment on that verse, that even if you commit something abominable, the main thing they say is that when the devotee is in right consciousness and he accidentally commits a mistake or falls, he's immediately remorseful and he's saying, I'm so bad, look what I've done. He doesn't develop a new philosophy, it's okay. Nobody can follow it, it's okay. We all know that behind closed doors, no one's following this, so it's okay. He doesn't say that. And I'm just going to continue. He doesn't say that. He says, look at me. Look how bad I am. Look what I've done. And he's remorseful. He said, that is why we see him as sadhu. Because he's determined, he's remorseful, and he's determined. That's different, right? Isn't it? So one should be remorseful. In fact, Bhaktivinoda Thakur says something interesting. I don't know if you're aware of this. He said that when you commit nama-aparad, as we know, what's the remedial measure when you commit nama-aparad? Just keep chanting. Yeah, more chanting. But he says it's not exactly like that. Because Bhaktivinoda Thakur said you could chant 100 rounds a day and not be Krishna conscious. So he said there, you should chant with remorse for having committed the offense to the holy name. So that's how you chant. Not that you just chant, but you chant remorseful. I've committed nama-aparad. Hare Krishna, Krishna, please forgive me for this nama-aparad. Hare Krishna, like that. So that's the mood of a Vaishnava. Okay, I've made a vow. Maybe I've slipped, maybe I've fallen. That was not my intention. My intention is to follow. I beg Krishna for forgiveness. I feel remorseful. I feel wretched. And now I feel more determined to follow it. Yeah, now there's a nice story. One of my favorite stories. This is such a fantastic story. There was a devotee who was not following the regular principles, or probably not following one of them or two of them. And he was very, very much liked by the devotees, and he was very sincere in his own way. And so, on one morning walk, they told Prabhupada about him and said, they're saying that he's having difficulty following the regular principles. And Prabhupada said, that means he's being strongly affected by the mode of ignorance. And then they said, Prabhupada, but he's very sincere. So they saw that he was trying. And then they said, but he's weak. And then Prabhupada immediately shot back and he said, why are you giving in to weakness? He didn't accept that as an excuse. And so what I got from that is that weakness sounds like a really good excuse. I mean, on the scale of, 1 to 10, with 10 being excellent and 1 being bad, that's a number 10 excuse, isn't it? 9 or a 10, don't you think? I'm weak. Like, I'm weak means I'm helpless. What can I do? I have no control. I have no choice. But Prabhupada didn't accept that. He didn't accept that. And if he did accept it, he wouldn't have initiated so many people, right? But what Prabhupada accepted, as far as I could tell, is that the sincerity of the devotee is most important. Otherwise, how could he initiate so many people? Because he knew if they were sincere, they would take to the process. He knew if they took to the process, they would be successful. And if they fell into the mode of ignorance, they would get out of it. Because once you're in ignorance, then you're in trouble, because the mode of ignorance, when you say I'm weak, basically what you're saying is the mode of ignorance is working on me, and I don't know how to get out of it. So You don't want to be weak and in the mode of ignorance at the same time. At least if you're in passion, you'll start moving out of it. If you're in ignorance, you're so handicapped in ignorance. But still, you know, it sounded like this devotee was in ignorance, but still Prabhupada said, why are you giving into weakness? So, in the Bhagavad Gita, there's a nice verse, and I was talking about this a few weeks ago, I believe, with some devotees. I was just in Mauritius, so we were talking about this. And I was telling them, my realization is that nothing can overpower one's strong desire to be Krishna conscious. There's nothing. It doesn't. If you have a strong desire to be Krishna conscious, nothing can stop you. No, your conditioning, your weakness, nothing can stop you. They're going to open the curtains now? Delayed reaction, suspense. Sri Sri Radha Gokula Nandaki Janshanadi. So we have this verse in Bhagavad Gita. Nahi Kalyana Krit Kashchid. Now Kalyana means auspicious. Or this translation is good. You know, or what's the translation? One who does good is never overcome by evil. Nahi Kalyana Krit Kashchid Durgatim Tatta Gachchati. One who does good is never overcome by evil. So one devotee gave the translation or the explanation, with the sincerity that brought you to Krishna. You know, sincerity brought us here, right? You know, brought us out of the material world. How could we get out if we weren't sincere? That same sincerity that brought you will be the sincerity that will keep you and will save you. Because that sincerity, durgatim tatta gacchasi, nothing can harm you if you have that sincerity. And that's why Prabhupada didn't accept weakness as an excuse. Why are you giving in? If you're actually sincere, why are you giving in? And so, if we have a desire to be Krishna conscious, then any force that's trying to divert us, it can't really work on us. That's what this verse is saying, right? Nahi kalyana krit kashchid. Durgati. One who does good can never become overcome, can never be overcome by evil. And then one of my godbrothers, in his explanation of this verse, he said, sincerity is invincible. It's like a little mantra, you know. You can make a t-shirt or make a poster. Sincerity is invincible. Or give a workshop. Write a book. Isn't that nice? Sincerity is invincible. Like you, if you're sincere truly, then you can't be harmed. So for us, when we make a vow, it has to be made sincerely. And because we know how important it was for Prabhupada that we would follow it, that he expected us to follow it, then we have to make that vow every day. There was a man, he was being interviewed, and they asked him, how many times you've been married? He said, 25 times. So the person doing the interview was kind of taken aback, and he said, no, actually, I get married every year to my wife. It's the same woman. We've just been married 25 times. So we make our vows every year again, you know. So the reality is, when you make a vow, you're supposed to make it every day. You don't make it once, you make it every day. So the vows we make in Krishna consciousness, we should make them every day. That's the idea. And that's what Prabhupada expected when we made them. And I'll tell you another story. It's from the beginning of the movement. It's probably 68. One married woman went off with a non-devotee man, and then she wrote Prabhupada a letter. No, her husband wrote a letter and told Prabhupada what she had done. So these things were going on. At one point, Prabhupada got very disgusted because he saw how we couldn't commit. Right? And he was actually, not that he would do it, but he was ready to give up. He said something like, what's the use? So when it came to vows and people not keeping promises and married couples divorcing, very upsetting to Prabhupada. Very upsetting. Because we, coming from the West, we don't have a dharmic tradition where you just do it because it's right. That's dharma. You know, it's the right thing, so you just do it. It's not if you feel like it, if it's something that's enjoyable, then I do it. If it's not enjoyable, I don't. When we were young and married, it was nice. When I was young devotee, it was easy to follow. Now it's difficult, so we just don't do it. That's not the world Prabhupada lived in. And that's not the world he wanted us to live in. But unfortunately, being raised in the West, that's the world we live in, right? The West is all about passion. And let me just explain the three modes so you understand the concept. In the mode of ignorance, there's not even an impetus to do something. There's only impetus. The only impetus you get is think about it, but to actually do it. And if you do it, you'll do the wrong thing, right? So ignorance is either you don't do it or you do it wrong. In passion, you might do the right thing, but you only do it because you like it. If you don't like it, you don't do it. Do you have the saying here in Merry England? If it feels good, do it. Did that get exported from America? If it feels good, do it. Yeah, one of the great exports of American culture. If it feels good, do it. Right? So if it feels good, do it is a definition of the mode of passion. Because the motivation and mode of passion is if it will make you happy. It's not about being right. But when you get to goodness, then it's your motivation is because it's the right thing. You do it because it's right. Not because you like it or you don't like it, but because it's right. And when you get to Vishuddhasattva, you do it to please Krishna. So that's the distinction. In the mode of ignorance, it's like, why even talk about it? It's so dark. But passion is just, I want to do it. Goodness is, it's the right thing. And Vishuddhasattva, to please Krishna. Of course, it's the right thing, but it pleases Krishna. But in Sattvaguna, it may not be to please Krishna. It's just the right thing. So you have, for example, you have marriage. Priyavrata Maharaj gets married. He's a nice sticky brahmachari. He refuses to marry. Lord Brahma comes down and says, we need you to marry. He does it. And then you'd think, okay, he doesn't want to get married, but he's going to do it because they want him to be the king and he needs a queen and he needs to have a son and so forth. So you would think, especially the women would think, who would want to marry him? He doesn't want to get married. Or, you know, men, would you want to marry a woman who doesn't want to get married? Doesn't make any sense, right? But the way the Shastra describes, he was an ideal husband. So how could a person who doesn't even want to get married be an ideal husband? So it's because he did it as a dharma. He took it as, okay, this is what I'm supposed to do. Now I'm a husband. So what does a husband do? A husband is nice to his wife, takes care of his kids, goes to the office, makes money, etc., etc. So that's what he did. It's there right in the Bhagavatam. Prabhupada said his wife and his kids had no indication at all that actually internally he was completely detached. He didn't have to do that. And, you know, one moment he could have left it all. But externally there was no indication because a good husband is never going to make his wife feel insecure. So they were completely secure. They got affection and protection. Because that's dharma, that's his duty. Isn't that amazing? He had no desire to do it. If that were us, you say, Prabhu, you know, we have this really nice woman here, and she really needs a husband, and she's such a great devotee, and you know, we really think you should do it. You know, he said, no, but I want to be brahmachari. No, do it, because it'll be good, because you'll make a great team and preach, you know. You probably would be a really bad husband, right? Because you don't want to do it. Unless your guru keeps hammering in the head, dharma, 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 do it, do it, do it, right? So that's the challenge we have in the West, and that's, Prabhupada saw clearly, we didn't have that in our blood. That's not the blood of the West. It's not the DNA of the West, dharma. It's just like, oh, I'm not going to do this. Why? So I don't feel like it. Do I need another reason? Is there any better reason than that? Right? So, that's why Prabhupada was so upset when we made a vow we didn't keep it. Right? So it's very important. So, just as it's said here, those who are pure, their word, like Brahma said, my words have never proven false. He said, because of my bhakti, my words have never proven false. So Prabhupada, in the same way, wants us, when we say we're going to do something, we do it. Now, in day-to-day life, how many things have you said you're going to do that you haven't done? You can't even remember them all, because you didn't do them. Right? So, anyway, it's, you know, practice with the little things that, you know, that makes it easier for the big things. So, maybe we'll end here. I'll have some discussion or questions or...